hear News Talk 1590 KVTA Ventura.
Following is a paid program. Gold Coast Broadcasting is not responsible for its content.
Customers receives additional compensation for his participation during this paid program.
It's time now for Divorce Lisa Zonder Style. Now, here's your host, Colin Fluxman.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Each week, we'll bring you a wealth of tips and resources, and guests specializing in various fields of divorce will answer your questions. Now, please remember, this is not intended to encourage divorce, but rather help you cope with this traumatic time in your life. If you have any questions for our guests on any divorce-related topic, please call this number, 805-650-1590. That's 805-650-1590. As you heard, the show is called Divorce Lisa Zonder Style. Lisa is a certified family law specialist out of Westlake Village who focuses her practice on mediation and the collaborative divorce process, as well as out-of-court solutions. We have three other guests in the studio today who will cover the emotional and financial aspects of divorce. Lisa, first of all, please tell us a bit about yourself and your goals for the show.
Oh, thank you, Colin. First of all, it's really good to be here at KVTA. It's a real honor. We have so many topics to talk about today. Before we get started, let me just tell you briefly, I'm a divorce attorney in Westlake Village, a mediator and collaborative divorce lawyer. I'm also a peacemaker. What I hope to do and focus the show on today is answer questions that I normally would answer at this workshop that I do called Second Saturday Divorce Workshop. And it's a divorce workshop in Westlake Village on the second Saturday of every month. And we get asked so many questions there that I figured today would be a good opportunity to go over some of those frequently asked questions. But before, you know, I do that, I wanted to give our two featured guests a chance to speak.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, as Lisa said, we have two featured guests, Dr. Diana Barnes, who is a psychotherapist in private practice and an internationally recognized expert on women's mental health, particularly around life transitions. She's the co-author of The Journey to Parenthood, Myths, Reality, and What Really Matters, Radcliffe 2007. Dr. Barnes has an extensive background in trauma, grief and loss, and has worked in the Los Angeles Superior Court system, helping parents create custody plans without having to litigate. Dr. Barnes has a busy private practice in Sherman Oaks. Welcome, Dr. Barnes.
I'm happy to be here, Colin. Thank you.
Thank you. A regular guest on the show is Jerry Cohen, a local CPA and forensic divorce accountant. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Colin.
And finally in our lineup, certainly not last, is Teresa Hayes, a marriage and family therapist in Westlake Village. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Colin.
Well, please call us on 805-650-1590. You don't have to go on air if you don't wish to be recognized. We'll take your question and you can listen to the response on your radio. You may, of course, remain anonymous. And the number to call right now, 805-650-1590, will answer any question that you may have concerning divorce. Dr. Barnes, can you please tell us what are some of the things that parents and other professionals should think about when considering custody arrangements?
Well, you know, Colin, parents spend an awful lot of energy thinking about where the kids should live, where the kids should stay. And I think very often that comes out of parental need. So I think there are a few things that parents and professionals want to think about. One is that one size does not fit all
right. When
it comes to thinking about custody, and what works for one child may not necessarily be appropriate for another child, even within the same family where there is more than one child. I think we have to think about, you know, what is the age of the child developmentally, and even the age of the child may not necessarily mean the same thing for every child. Frequent and continuing contact with both parents in a way that's developmentally appropriate for the age of the child. Children, I think bottom line, children really need to have a relationship with both parents.
Yes, yes. Is there one specific thing that has an impact on how well children adjust to the divorce and custody arrangements?
Well, you know, they've done a lot of research in this area, and one of the findings is that it's not so much where the child resides that's important, but much more how well the parents communicate with each other. And of course, you know, that's something Teresa's going to talk about later in the show, but that's one of the hardest things for parents to do is to communicate with each other post-divorce.
Yes.
If they could do it well, they'd probably still be together. What children of any age, even teens, and probably especially teens, need is predictability, they need structure, and they need consistency.
Parents may have different rules and not be able to cooperate because of their own divorce-related conflict. How does that affect the children?
Well, you know, I think there is a kind of a prevailing belief that parents have to be exactly the same all the time, and that everything has to be kind of consistent across the board, whether it's bedtime, whether it's certain curfew rules. And the truth is that children can learn to live with different rules at different houses. They can know that at mom's house we can do this, but at dad's house we're not allowed to do that. But I think the important thing is that the rules need to be consistent and they need to be clear.
That's very important. We'll get back to you, Dr. Barnes. If you have any questions for Dr. Barnes or any other divorce-related issue, whether it's for yourself, a family member, friend, or colleague, please call 805-650-1590. And remember that the advice given by our panel is not intended as legal or other professional advice. For that, you need to set up a private consultation with a reputable professional. Our next guest, Teresa Hayes, is a local marriage and family therapist with a special focus on divorce issues and how they impact individuals and families. Teresa, divorce is a very emotional roller coaster. What services do you actually provide to your clients?
Well, there's a number of approaches that I have depending on what they need. And many times it's managing their own emotional state so they can be there for their children through this process. And it's also learning how not to be triggered by their spouse or their ex, soon-to-be ex-spouse, how to communicate effectively with them. Because when there's children involved, as Diana said, there needs to be some transition time for the children and some communication about rules and such.
How should divorcing couples deal with anger when it comes up in communication, whether it's email, text, on the telephone?
Well, one of the key things is to be aware of the reaction to the anger. The one thing that you really don't want to do is engage with an angry person when they're upset. Because when that anger is up, it's a very strong emotion, and the logic can't come in at that time. They're really all operating in the right brain. And so they, when words come in, it actually overstimulates the upset that they're experiencing. And the second thing is really accept that they're angry, and not try to talk them out of their anger, not try to change them so they won't be angry. And it really is their anger. So many times when a spouse or an ex is angry about something with the children, a schedule change or that, they are going to dump that all on you. And so what you can do is remember they're upset. It's not something that you did. It's the reaction to that, and they are in charge of that reaction. They're in charge of that responsibility. And that's a way to separate and distance one from the angry person, so they don't get engaged.
So what I understand is that you say that they have to maintain their anger, contain it, and contain it.
Mm-hmm.
But they still should be able to express that anger. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they're going to express their anger. We hope that they can do that in a respectful way if they have an issue. And part of it is that there's really a range of emotions, anywhere from ecstatic to raging. And anger is more on that raging side when things are just terrible.
Okay.
And what the idea is to move closer to a neutral position of really expressing their frustration, their disappointment, and their irritation, which are a lot lower level emotionally than anger.
Right. Teresa can be found on the web at newway2b.com. That's N-E-W-W-A-Y, the number 2B.com. We'll get to Jerry in just a moment. We have a caller on the line, Greg from Thousand Oaks. Hi, Greg.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
You have a question. Yes, go ahead.
I have a question about custody. I currently have, I've been divorced 3 years. I have 50-50 custody of my two kids with my ex here. And me and my ex do not get along at all. So I'm thinking about relocating back to my home state of Colorado. I just want to know, am I going to be able to retain any type of custody of my kids? Like, can I get them in the summertime?
That's a good question, Greg. Which one of our panelists would like to take this? Teresa, would you like to do this?
Yes. One of the things I hear is that you want to move, but yet you want to stay in contact with your children and see them.
I'd like to get them, like, in the summertime, and, like on spring break and Christmas break.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if I could legally do that.
Well, let me turn that over to Lisa on the legal aspect of it.
Okay, so let me understand your question just a little bit. So you have a shared custody arrangement with your ex-spouse?
Correct.
Okay, and you're trying to move, and is this something that she agrees with?
You know what? I haven't talked to her about it at all, not yet. I'm thinking about doing this sometime in the middle of next year.
Right. Oh, so normally the first thing we would recommend is that you would talk with her about it and see if it's something where you can reach an agreement on how the parenting plan would look if you made that move, and, you know, see what her reaction is first before you decide to take any legal action.
Okay.
You know, and the other thing you can consider is if you were to eventually file something with the courts, assuming that she isn't in agreement with you taking the children and moving with them, one thing you can do is the courts will provide you with an opportunity to see a custody recommending counselor, and or also called a mediator. So there in the courts, they'll offer you an opportunity to try to work something out. If you're in Ventura, I take it, correct?
I'm actually in L.A. County. In LA County.
Oh, you're in LA County. So if you were in Ventura County, then they would make a recommendation. But if you're in LA County, the courts there will have you do a mediation, but they won't make a recommendation. Another option, if you're in LA County, is that you might get a private child custody evaluator. But that's kind of far down the line from where you are right now. It's something that you could ultimately consider. Maybe I can have Teresa speak to that issue just a little bit in terms of the psychological side of it.
Yeah, it really, as Lisa said, the best thing is to talk to your ex about your plans and to see if the two of you could come up with that plan. And, you know, there's opportunities to use a counselor for that, or a divorce coach, or even a mediator to help you have that discussion. How old are the children?
My daughter is going to be 11, and my son is 7.
Okay. Because that's a very important part, is to take into consideration how they would be away from their mother for an extended period of time. That's part of the planning process, how it's going to affect their summertime, their camps or their school, or if they have extracurricular activities in the summer. So there's a lot of factors in there to focus on how the children are really going to be able to handle and enjoy the time with you in the summer times and at breaks and such. And I've seen where it can work, and it really is important to find ways to keep in contact with them throughout the year.
Yeah, like right now, I mean, me and the ex are battling very, very bad. And I don't think that's healthy for the kids or healthy for us, so that's why I'm contemplating just moving back to my home state to get away from all this conflict.
Okay, so there's a lot of conflict between you and their mother?
Yes, there is.
Okay. And that, you know, many times happens, and the emotional part of divorce doesn't end when the papers are signed, and it continues on, and especially if there's differences in parenting of the children, different ideas of what they're going to do, those continued conflicts come up. So sometimes it's just a way of how to communicate.
I might also like to add that even when we move away, the emotional conflicts don't necessarily end. And while I can certainly understand that that would be what you might believe, it continues. And so if a decision is going to be made to move away at some point, it might be really helpful, as Teresa is suggesting, to work with a divorce coach or a counselor, someone who can help you and your ex-partner work through the emotional conflict so that if and when you do decide to relocate, it will be better for the children.
Right. Okay.
Thank you for the call, Greg.
Thank you.
The number to call is 805-650-1590. You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA.
Are you contemplating divorce? Maybe you've already filed for divorce and are overwhelmed by the process, or you're in the midst of a divorce and not sure what to do next. Well, we have the answer for you. The second Saturday Divorce Workshop. Explore the legal, financial, and emotional aspects of divorce. Discover community resources available to help you. Talk with others experiencing similar life changes. Learn from experts who have guided others through divorce. Workshops are held at 2625 Tilesgate Road, Suite 330, Westlake Village, on the second Saturday of each month from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Register by calling 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810 or email us at secondsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. That's 2ndsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. Call 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810. If you're looking for workshop locations other than Westlake Village, check out the website at wife.org. That's wife.org.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. We're on the air each Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. If you have a question for any one of our guests on any divorce-related issue, please call 805-650-1590. On the line from Oxnard, Amanda. Hi there, Amanda.
Hello.
Hi. Your question?
Yes. I was just wondering, I have, I'm currently going through a divorce with my husband, and we have three kids, and I've really been having a really big struggle because he's continuously telling them that I'm the one who sought the separation, that I don't think he's ever gone so far as to say it's mommy's fault, but really it seems like every time I get my kids back from when they're spending time with him, they're constantly asking me, why aren't you getting back together? Why did you want to leave daddy, mommy? And it's just been taking such a toll, and I keep trying to confront him about this, and he keeps trying to deny that is happening. But it's so clear to me that he's after I get them back that he's saying something to them. And I'm just kind of at a loss because I've tried to confront him. I've tried, and he's just denying it. But obviously somebody's putting this in their ears, and I just am kind of at a little bit of a loss of how to approach this with them so that the mommy's not always the bad guy. You know, I love my children, and I'm trying my hardest to get through this and get them through this without as much, you know, emotional collateral damage as can be. And it's just really starting to take a toll on me, and I feel like I'm the more that I get frustrated with it, the worse that it is on my children.
Hi, Amanda. This is Diana Barnes. You know, I don't know how much this will reassure you, but I do need to let you know that, you know, when one parent badmouths another parent, especially in divorce, it really often backfires against the parent who's doing the belittling. And it makes children feel as though they need to idealize the other parent even more. I think one of the things you might want to try to talk to your partner about, if he's able to listen, is that he is really harming the children by doing this and putting the children in a position where they often feel as though they have to choose between one parent or the other. I'm going to turn it over to Teresa now because I know she has some comments as well.
Hi. This is sometimes too common of a situation, unfortunately. And sometimes he may be denying, say, saying something directly to the children, and he may not be saying something directly to them, but based on the language he uses, the words, maybe just some comments in general, that they're picking up this idea from him. They may overhear him, too. And so sometimes, in addressing this directly with your husband, he may be defensive and say, oh, no, I'm not telling them anything.
Yeah.
So it can really turn it around about maybe your concern and how the children act or they're upset when they come back.
Yeah.
And to maybe open it up to having a dialogue about how can we make it easier for our children to transition from my house to your house and your house to my house, because I'm seeing that they're upset. And even offering, well, maybe they're overhearing something that he says.
Go
ahead.
Well, you don't think that perhaps having a family discussion or just having all five of us sit down, and I mean the baby won't, but at least my eldest and my second, that we can maybe I don't know if I should even bring it up with all of us in the same room, if that's going to make me look like it. I don't know. I'm just holding on to what you said about often that it'll backfire on the other parent. And I don't know if I should include the children in that conversation or if I just need to continue to try and have another open conversation with my ex.
How old are your children, Amanda?
I have a 6-year-old son and then a 4-year-old daughter. And then I have the baby. She's almost 24 months.
Well, you know, it sounds like this is a conversation that you and your husband really need to have apart from the children because they are so young. And I think it's also important to recognize that sometimes when children return after they've spent one time with a parent, just the transition itself can be very stressful for children. So, you know, whether something is going on with your ex-husband or not, whether he is saying something or not, I think it is important to remind yourself that the transition is stressful. These are young children, you know, six, there's a baby involved. So they're gonna have to, you know, it takes time for them to adjust moving back from, you know, from one parent's house to another parent's house.
Yeah.
Does that help, Amanda, in any way? I know it's a tough situation. Do you have any other questions?
It does. Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's just been so, I feel like sometimes I'm banging my head up against a brick wall. And I mean, other than just trying to have continuous conversations with this person, I, in so many ways, don't want to have conversation with anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this is Teresa. I really hear your frustration and some of the pain and that sort of thing. And, you know, one of the options here is to maybe check out a co-parenting workshop. That can really be helpful to learn how to manage your own stress and your own emotions and learn some communication techniques. Because I can understand you don't want to get into a full dialogue with your ex, but there still needs to be that combination for communication for the children.
Yeah, and that's my biggest, I mean, that's my my everything. I try really hard to keep it together.
Well, I think we're losing...
Can you hear?
That's okay. But thanks so much for the call, Amanda. We appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Goodbye. You're listening to Divorce Talk, Lisa Zonder Style on AM 1590 KVTA 805-650-1590. That's the number to call. If you have any questions for our panel of experts, please do not hesitate to call. We're live. We're in the studio. 805-650-1590. Turning attention now to Jerry for a moment, Jerry, and financial matters. Once the initial petition for divorce is served, what types of documents do you help your clients prepare?
There's several different types of documents, and on my side, the financial reports. At the beginning of the case, and actually at the end also, there are two required financial declaration statements, basically listing all your property, which is anything you own, and anything you owe, any debts or loans, and also listing all sources of your income and your living expenses. And again, those are required to exchange with each party at the beginning of the process and then toward the end of the process. And then as far as other financial reports that we prepare and look at during the process while we're looking at the financial and tax issues of the divorce are budget reports, trying to see how each person may come out based on different scenarios of dividing the assets. Will they have enough income to cover the expenses? Such things as I'd like to keep the house. Could I afford it? Maybe an analysis on that. And any other specific issues. If someone owns a business, we may do some type of accounting on that. So there's a variety of different financial reports that, depending on the case, we'll prepare.
Let's turn our attention for a moment now to some legal aspects of filing for divorce. Lisa, you mentioned you have frequently asked questions in your workshops. What options are available to clients who are ready to file for divorce? Are they stuck going to court?
No, they're definitely not stuck going to court. You know, they have the option of self-representation in the courthouse, or they can hire an attorney, and the attorney can represent them in court or out of court. And if they would like to be in an out-of-court environment, even there they have lots of options, including mediation or collaborative divorce or cooperative divorce. So there are many options for clients, and you know, I'm hoping that I can devote upcoming shows to talking in more detail about mediation and collaborative and cooperative, so I can give listeners a better understanding of exactly what those processes look like.
What do you suggest to those individuals who simply cannot afford a lawyer?
Oh, there are lots of options there, too. I mean, they can call, if you can't afford a lawyer privately, you can call a local bar association. You can ask for an attorney on the reduced fee panels. Most local bar associations have attorneys willing to work at a lower hourly rate. They can also go to the Ventura Superior Court here on Victoria Avenue and seek assistance from the Family Law Self-Help Center. There's a facilitator over at the courthouse. And also there's a court website. And so if they check the court website, they'll find a self-help icon on that website, which will give them lots of helpful information on how to fill out forms. They have DVDs or, you know, up on the web so that you can actually watch, you know, some informational videos there about how to change your support order or how to fill out a petition and get a case started. So anyone can really benefit from that, even if you have an attorney. And also, there may be some free local services or low-cost local services in Ventura County. I'm aware and not sure how active they are, but Conejo Free Clinic Legal Services and a Community Action of Ventura County, which I believe was in Oxnard. And also, they can check local law school clinics. Sometimes you can get helped by supervised law students. So it's not like you're without options, even if you can't afford a private attorney.
What are some of the filing fees? For those who actually do it themselves, they still have to pay the filing fees, isn't that right?
Right. There are court costs, and those are listed on the website. Mm-hmm. So right now, filing a petition is $435. Okay. But, you know, those are constantly moving targets, and the costs always change.
Yes, I would imagine. Dr. Barnes, question for you. What are some of the guidelines? I know we did discuss this in our calls that we've received today. Some of the guidelines with respect to custody when considering the age of the child?
Well, if we're looking at the very young child, you know, we just had a caller calling in about a 24-month-old child.
Yes.
In infancy, children are learning about trust and safety. And so overnights are just not appropriate for an infant. And the reason they're not is because we don't want to do anything in the first year of life or the first 3 years of life that disrupts the attachment relationship with the primary attachment figure in any kind of a significant way. And I know this becomes often problematic when trying to figure out custody, because often parents want things to be so equal. But if we are thinking about the developmental needs of the child, an infant should not be away for any extended period of time from the parent who's providing the day-to-day care. And there's extensive research on attachment that actually talks about the long-term consequences of extended separations from the primary attachment mm-hmm. figure.
We had a call just a few minutes ago from Amanda, and I think this particular question comes up very often, I'm sure, in your experience, how parents can protect children from their own divorce-related conflicts.
So right.
How would
right.
you respond to that?
Well, I will say again, don't badmouth the other parent. It really works against the parent who is doing the badmouthing. It just works against them. In the end, as children grow, they figure out what's going on, and they come to understand the truth of the situation. So it really it gets in the way of the relationship. In a number of ways. One of the ways in which it gets in the way is that children begin to feel like they need to idealize that parent. Children start to feel as though they need to choose between one parent or another if there's a conflict. This is one of the biggest things that I hear, especially from my adult female clients that I work with who've experienced divorce in their own childhoods, that they felt a loyalty conflict. They couldn't love both parents in the way that they wanted to freely because they always felt as though they had to choose. And for the younger child, there's something called magical thinking. And where children, young children, believe as though they may come to believe that they're actually responsible for the conflict or that they're even responsible for the divorce. And certainly that's not in the best interests of the child. So I think parents need to respect each other's schedules for the best interests of the children. There should be advanced communication when there's a change in the schedule. Don't spring it on the other parent or even on the child, because children need predictability. They need consistency and routine, even the adolescent.
Are there any situations where joint custody is just not in the best interests of the child?
Well, I think there may be certain situations and special circumstances, like if there is a significant problem with substance abuse with one of the partners, if one of the partners is engaged in criminal activity, if there's domestic violence. I think that maybe, you know, Teresa might be able to speak to that in terms of situations where it's not in the best interest of the child.
Yes, sometimes it's based on those kind of issues, drug abuse or criminal activity or that kind of thing. And sometimes it's just not realistic to have full joint custody because of the demands of one of the parents' work schedules or their ability to really take care of that of their child in the way that child needs to be taken care of. This would be maybe a special needs child. It would be another case where you want to do it a little differently and maybe not have joint custody, but still have contact. In almost all cases, that child has still got a mother or father out there that they need to have contact with.
We have a message here from Julie. My husband handed me divorce papers and demands that I sign. Lisa, what do you suggest?
Well, Colin, I mean, no one ever wants to just sign legal papers that they don't understand. So clearly, I would say get advice from a reputable attorney before you sign any legal documents. You know, if a private lawyer seems unaffordable, we just gave you some suggestions about how to deal with that, going to a local bar association. And I gave some suggestions about possible free or reduced fee services available in Ventura County. Also, if you're in LA County, I didn't mention, and I'll mention to you as well, that you could go to Harriet Buhai or Levitt and Quinn, and they do, if you qualify for services, offer divorce services. But the other things you can do before you sign legal papers, and depending on whether you can afford private lawyers or not, you can also ask some of the lawyers in your county about unbundled legal services or limited scope services, and there they can actually just review a document for you or do a discrete task without handling your entire case. So you can just pay them per job for the job that you're doing. And also, some people should check if they're employed. They may have prepaid legal services through their work. So there are things that you should explore first to see if you have any available legal services through your employment. If you don't, you know, go to a private attorney. And after that, if you have issues of affordability, you know, check out some of those resources that I suggested earlier.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. Lisa is a divorce attorney out of Westlake Village, and if you'd like to consult privately with Lisa, please go to her website for details at zonderfamilylaw.com, zonderfamilylaw.com. Our special guests today are Dr. Diana Barnes, a psychotherapist and expert on women's mental health, Teresa Hayes, a marriage and family therapist, and our regular guest, Jerry Cohen, a CPA and divorce forensic accountant. If you have any questions for our panelists, please call 805-650-1590.
Are you contemplating divorce? Maybe you've already filed for divorce and are overwhelmed by the process, or you're in the midst of a divorce and not sure what to do next. Well, we have the answer for you. The Second Saturday Divorce Workshop. Explore the legal, financial, and emotional aspects of divorce. Discover community resources available to help you. Talk with others experiencing similar life changes. Learn from experts who have guided others through divorce. Workshops are held at 2625 Townsgate Road, Suite 330, Westlake Village, on the second Saturday of each month from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Register by calling 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810 or email us at secondsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. That's 2ndsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. Call 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810. If you're looking for workshop locations other than Westlake Village, check out the website at wife.org. That's wife.org.
Divorce Talk. Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. The number to call right now if you have any questions related to your divorce or someone in the family or friend, 805-650-1590. You may remain anonymous, 805-650-1590. Teresa, are there ways to talk to an angry spouse effectively? I know we covered this briefly in a previous question, but could you go over that again, please?
Well, one of the ways is with somebody who tends to be angry or easily emotionally upset, it's very to choose words very carefully is important. And in dealing with an ex or a spouse during a divorce, really want to keep it simple. Just stick to the facts. If it's a request about the children or about some paperwork that needs to be exchanged, to just keep it very simple. Avoid what I call critical descriptors, which is, you know, well, I've been waiting for this the declaration of income, and if you were just more organized, you could get this done quicker. So when are you going to get it to me? Well, boom, that's going to set off
right.
an argument.
Yes.
So it's really about, you know, we need that document to proceed, and we agreed on this date. When do you think you can get it to me? What's going on? And keep it very businesslike in so many ways.
Is civility a difficult thing with clients, to keep it civil? Is that
it is. I mean, the emotions in divorce are so high, and anything that's been going on in the marriage that led to the divorce is heightened. And so it is really difficult to do that, and it's planning. So most people kind of know what their spouse is going to react to or how they're going to react, and they know they have to have that difficult conversation, or they have to have a request that they have to make that could be triggering. And it's planning. It's writing a script, writing it down. See how you would react to that message coming at you. And really, it's remembering that if they get angry, it's not because of what you said. It's how they're interpreting it.
Of course, you're referring to empathy, which is really very difficult to deal with in this volatile situation, wouldn't you agree?
It is. And one of the things to remember is what Diana had said, is that the children react to this conflict. And also that the way the children can survive and thrive through a divorce situation is by minimizing conflict between the parents. And so the empathy can come from, this is my children's father.
Right.
This is my children's mother. And how am I going to communicate with them so that the children can be okay through the divorce?
Dr. Barnes, what is the bottom line in choosing a parenting plan, do you think?
I think the bottom line here, and we've been saying this, I think, throughout the show today, is that parents need to consider the child's relationship with each parent. I think, you know, in a divorce, as Teresa said, emotions are so charged, and the temperature is really, really high. And I think underneath all of this, parents are really afraid that they're going to lose that relationship with the child. That if I let you have, you know, if I give you 50%, or if my child is with you this much time, that means that something is going to happen to our relationship and there's going to be a rift. And that's not really true at all. But I think it's important to recognize as well that if a parent has never been part, even as we're considering a child's relationship with each parent, if a parent has never been part of a child's life or has not had contact of any, you know, significance with the child for an extended period, then I think it's important that access should start slowly and should gradually increase as the child adjusts and feels more comfortable. And even as the child grows, you know, you may start out with one custody plan that works for a child who's 3, and as that child turns 6 and then 8 and then 11, they can tolerate longer separations and, you know, more time with each parent.
A very relevant question I have, and it's come up in many discussions I've had with friends and acquaintances, and you mentioned as the child gets older, say teenagers, 15, 16, 17, do they have the right to say, no, I'm not going to stick to this plan, which you drew up 4 or 5 years ago. I'm now going to decide when I want to see my dad or my mom. How does that factor in?
Well, I think Lisa can probably speak to the legality of it, but there does come a time in a child's life when they do get to make decisions and that they do need more flexibility in the living arrangements and more of a say in how the parenting plan looks. I think it is possible to give teens more autonomy about their living arrangements, but still making it clear that the final decision is up to the parents. It's that, you know, it's the earlier caller who said, should we have a whole family discussion about this? Or do I talk about this separately with my ex-husband?
Mm-hmm. Lisa, can you speak to the legality of that particular situation?
Well, if you're in Ventura County, the courts, when they send you to mediation, they're going to, the mediators there, the child custody recommending counselors, are going to take into consideration the voice of the teenage child. So they'll definitely want to hear what the teenager has to say, and they'll, when they develop recommendations, take that into account. And, you know, aside from the fact, what I tell parents who come to me, and I've had this before with cases where they have 16 and 17 year olds, good luck enforcing that court order. I mean, yes, obviously you can encourage the teenager to go see dad or to go see mom, you know, but what are you going to do? I mean, law enforcement, they generally don't want to get involved in those types of disputes between parents and teenagers. So oftentimes, you know, you may even go to court and get an order that says the teenage child has to be with dad on, you know, X night and Y night during the week. And unfortunately, hopefully mom is encouraging that in that hypothetical situation, but it's really hard to think that law enforcement's going to take any action to force the teenager. It's really up to the parents to try and abide by the court orders, and really that's all, you know, the other parent can do is try and encourage that child, and they don't want to be in jeopardy of parental alienation or anything along those lines. So certainly, you know, each parent should be on their best behavior to cooperate with court orders, but sometimes the courts, you know, may have to look at the situation and take into account what the teenager wants.
You're listening to Divorce Talk, Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. The number to call is 805-650-1590. That's 1590. 805-650-1590. Please feel free to pick up the phone and call and ask. We have an incredible panel of experts, specialists here who could answer any question related to your divorce or to a divorce of someone near and dear to you. Jerry, over to you for a second. How do you figure how much child support to pay?
Yeah, child support's a good example of one of the issues I work on that has a very close relationship between the legal and financial part of it. In California, there's very specific guidelines on how to calculate child support and spousal support, alimony, and also what gets factored in. On child support, it's very heavily weighed on the timeshare, the percent of time that each parent has with the child, and it's also heavily weighted on the income of each party. The timeshare, depending on how well or not the couple are cooperating, and if they have a very set schedule, it's pretty easy to measure the time. The one that may not be quite as easy is the income, because as other issues in family law, income for support and for family law purposes may not be the same as it is for your tax return or your accountant or other your budget. So we have to, on the income side, look at some issues that come part from a tax return and part from getting a list of income and expenses from each party. So it's we eventually do work something out on it, but it's not as straightforward as just a formula you could plug into your program and get an answer.
Teresa, what advice do you have for handling toxic emails and texts? And I'm sure you've seen many of those.
I have. I've had clients share them with me, and we've actually strategized on how to deal with this, because we're in our society, we're interrupt driven. There's a text, there's an email, there's a tweet, there's something that's always happening. And one of the ways is to take the emails that are coming from the ex's email address and have them routed directly to a different folder. That way you'll never see them during the day. It empowers you to pick the time that you want to read those emails. And then, because usually there's something in there about the children or about, you know, something that's important, but usually it's wrapped in all this toxicity and complaints and anger and everything else. So you get ready to read that, open that folder. Take a deep breath, and you go through and you scan, and you look for the keywords that you may have to respond to, because you only have to respond to the things that are important. You don't have to fire an email back defending or clarifying or telling the truth.
However tempted you are to do
however that. Tempted. Now, if it feels good to do that, do it, but don't send it. Delete it.
Easier said than done.
It
I'm
is.
Sure, yeah.
It is. But that's been another strategy that we've had, is let it loose, delete it, mm-hmm. or send it to a trusted friend and say, can you read this and see if it's okay?
Right. If you have a question for any of our guests today on any aspect of divorce, the number to call is 805-650-1590. Lisa, do you have to prove fault to get a divorce in California?
No, California is a no-fault state. And so when you file the petition, you check the box. It says irreconcilable differences for the most part. That's the norm. So if you allege any other grounds like incurable insanity, as people might be tempted to do, you're going to have to prove it. So
how do you do that?
I'm sure it's not that difficult if it actually exists, right? So even if you think your spouse is deranged and you're kind of angry about it, you know, you really want to think twice about it and get an opinion from a reliable professional, legal professional, because, you know, you're really going to cost yourself quite a bit of money if it's not the case and you can't prove it. I mean, why go through the trouble? You might feel good temporarily, but, you know, you could also end up, like, paying more legal fees, getting sanctioned by the court, wasting people's time. It's just not a good idea generally. There's the old joke, too, that, here's just another of our many disagreements, right? I want a no-fault divorce, and he wants to run me over. So definitely there are some concepts around no-fault divorce, but you don't need to prove it in California.
When you start a proceeding, it's with formal court papers. You mentioned the petition. What does the summons do? Is that served along with the petition?
Right. The summons form has information that's really important for the parties when they get started on their divorce action. So there are standard restraining orders, and we call those ATROs, which is an acronym for automatic temporary restraining orders. They go into effect when you file the divorce petition, and they also are in effect when you get served with a divorce petition. So what those automatic restraining orders do when you get served with a divorce or file it is it prohibits you or your spouse from moving out of state with your children from your marriage. It stops you from just doing things with your property, your money, your assets and debts. You can't start withdrawing cash, liquidating, you know, businesses, moving money around. The goal is to stop anyone from trying to bleed the marital estate. Those are things you can't do unless you get prior written consent of the other party or a court order. So you got to be really careful with those automatic restraining orders. And what we tell people, too, is come to us if you have a specific question about the automatic restraining order and whether it applies to something you're trying to do. If, for example, you have a purchase that you're trying to make, you want to buy a new car, a new home. If you want to take out money to pay an attorney, you know, so there may be some exceptions to the automatic restraining orders, but those should be done with advice from competent counsel. You shouldn't just simply make decisions on your own because you could be facing some sanctions or monetary consequences from a judge if you decide to play fast and loose.
805-650-1590. Dr. Barnes, just for a moment, if I may digress, the title of the book that you co-authored, The Journey to Parenthood, Myths, Reality, and What Really Matters, what made you choose that title?
Well, as you mentioned in my introduction, I specialize in women's mental health around life transitions, and particularly around issues of pregnancy and childbirth. And having gone through my own pregnancy and childbirth a couple of times, I began to really realize that parents don't prepare themselves for having children, that we kind of expect that it's all going to fall in place, it's all going to just kind of come together naturally.
It doesn't come with instructions.
Babies don't come with a set of instructions, but somehow, even in that early period after the birth of a child, there's a prevailing belief in our culture that things are just going to fall into place and that it's a great time in your life and you don't really have to think about anything, and there's a lot of energy spent on the right nursery, the right diaper bag, the right furniture in the nursery, the right stroller, but people rarely think about their own kind of emotional and their inner life and how it feels to become parents. And so it was out of that that the book was spawned.
Do you think that people get divorced because they don't really take any of that into account?
I think there are lots of reasons why people dissolve a relationship. It's always a very sad thing when it does happen. And, you know, we're talking a lot today about anger associated with divorce and how to communicate. And as someone who works a lot with, you know, with women who are grieving, who may be going through a life transition, I think underneath all of that anger is often fear about the future. What is my life going to look like? Sadness about the loss of this relationship. And it often registers, you know, as anger. And when a change happens, and a significant kind of a change that occurs as a result of a divorce, that's grief and mourning.
Yes.
And it needs to be addressed.
Right. Jerry, do divorcing couples get half of everything they own?
Well, sometimes that could happen, but I haven't seen one with the house yet. We haven't had one try to cut one in half, although
right.
I got close once.
Really?
Really.
What happened?
Husband was a carpenter, and he threatened to
cut the
bring
house
out one of his
half?
Big saws and
wow.
start cutting. But
you see that in the movies, but you didn't think that would be reality, right?
Well, you never know. Some of the stuff we work with is somewhere between reality and something you may see in other venues. Anything in the divorce, financial-wise, we could split. What we typically do is assign a value to everything, whether it's a bank account or a house or a car, anything that the parties own. And instead of trying to cut stuff in half or saw the house in half, we try to balance out number-wise. So we will, the initial process in gathering the financial information is to be sure we've identified everything and try to get an accurate estimate of the cost, and then we do it more by dollar for dollar.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. Lisa, who's our special guest in next week's show, I believe it's Bruce Friedenberg. Tell us a little bit about Bruce, please.
Bruce is a marriage and family therapist from the Orange County area, Colin, and you know, I'm looking forward to having him on air. I think he's going to be covering a lot of topics, so I don't even want to pin down exactly what he's going to be speaking to us on. He's a very interesting guy, and he'll have lots of topics to speak on when it comes to divorce.
Certainly looking forward to that. Lisa, what if a client doesn't want a divorce? I mean, here's the situation where, you know, I don't want to get divorced. You want to, but I don't want to.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, because it's a no-fault state, you know, the judge is probably going to grant the divorce anyway. So, you know, maybe that's a therapy issue instead of a legal issue, because from the legal side of it, there isn't too much you can do. The only thing I would say is if somebody, for example, is religious, and for religious reasons, they're trying to resist a divorce, they may actually ask the spouse to consider a legal separation as opposed to a divorce. Sometimes that might be agreeable to the other spouse, I mean, unless someone's looking to remarry.
Dr. Bonds, I understand that there are more divorces, and this is quite astounding, in the first year after having a child than at any other time.
Actually, that's true. The level of marital satisfaction takes a big dip after people have a child. It is an extremely stressful time in the life of a couple, in the life of a new family. And there's a prevailing belief that if we have a baby, it's going to bring us closer. But it will not bring you closer unless you are the best of friends before you have that baby.
Right, right. Lisa, back to you again. Can a divorce be final in 6 months?
That's a very common misconception that I wanted to go over. No, not before 6 months, because in California there is a cooling off period of 6 months. So the court won't enter any divorce before 6 months. So no termination of marital status. That means don't get married before 6 months or you potentially will be a bigamist, okay? But you know, even if you and your spouse agree on everything and you come up with a settlement agreement in writing, comprehensive settlement agreement, and you submit it to the court, you don't have to wait 6 months to submit it. You could submit it to the judge right away for signature, but still the court on the paperwork is going to say that you're not free to remarry or your marital status isn't terminated for at least 6 months from the date of the service of the petition.
Would you regard that as a cooling off period, perhaps? Is that what the law is saying to those who are going through a divorce or contemplating a divorce, that, hey, you've got 6 months to change your mind?
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. It's considered a cooling off period to give people an opportunity to reconcile or consider counseling or do something differently. So, you know, the clients are generally not going to remarry, you know, within the first 6 months anyway, unless they've held off on filing that divorce or, you know, for a very long time. Some people live separate and apart for many, many years. So by the time they file their divorce settlement paperwork, you know, it's been years, but still the court won't enter it for 6 months. So there is a myth in that. So you can't remarry after 6 months, within 6 months, until after the court enters it. And not only that, there are also people who mistakenly think that it's automatic, that, you know, at 6 months you're automatically divorced, Colin, and that's not true either. So there's kind of two parts to this.
Right. We have time for one more question. What is the average divorce retainer?
I'm finding the norm, at least in the county where I am, in Ventura County, it depends on the firm and the complexity of the divorce case, but the average litigation retainers seem to be between $3,500 and $7,500. There is far more to ask your attorney when you're asking for a retainer quote. You know, you want to also find out what their hourly rates are for the lawyer, for the staff. You can ask for estimates of the total case cost if you'll get one. But I don't know any lawyers who charge flat fees. Nearly all will just cite for you their hourly rate.
Well, that's it, I'm afraid, for this edition of Divorce Talk, Lisa Sonder Style. Thanks to our special guests, Dr. Diana Barnes. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Pleasure.
And to you, Teresa, thank you, Teresa Hayes.
Thank you.
Our regular panel, Jerry Cohen. Hi, Jerry, and thank you. And Lisa Sonder. Our special guest next week is Bruce Friedenberg, a marriage and family therapist. I'm Colin Fluxman.
Tune in every Saturday at 3 p.m. for Divorce Lisa Sonder Style.
This radio programming is not intended to encourage anyone to seek a divorce. The producers assume that callers are seeking basic information. The radio program is intended to be an informational format and does not constitute legal advice. Anyone with legal, mental health, financial, or other professional questions is directed to retain a competent professional after carefully interviewing qualified professionals. A guest appearance by a particular panelist does not constitute a specific recommendation by the producers as to the expertise of that professional, nor does that panelist's views necessarily reflect the views of the producer.